Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You're listening to WCOM LP 103.5 FM, Carborough and Chapel Hill. It's a Tuesday, it's 5 o'clock, and that only means one thing. It's time for another round of Snarky Faith with your host, Stuart Deloney. This is a space where we irreverently wrestle through life, culture and spirituality, all with our heads in the clouds, our tongues in our cheeks, our hearts in our sleeves, and our feet on the ground. At Snarky Faith, the questions or even the answers are never the point. It's all about the conversation. So here's your host, Stuart Deloney.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to another round of Snarky Faith. I'm your host, Stuart Deloney, and Snarky Faith is radio for the spiritually disenfranchised. If you've had enough of the insanity of Christianity, well, you've come to the right place. Here at Snarky Faith, we're all about finding a sane faith grounded in reality and working to make the world a better place in tangible ways. We're here to call out religious BS, look for better ways forward, and help you realize that you're not crazy. This religious stuff is nuts. And if you can handle your conversations about faith with copious amounts of
sarcasm
and also a bit of this, then welcome home. We're glad you're here. On today's show, I'm going to be sitting down with author and poet Megan Ruby Wagner, talking about her book, Honeysuckle, and the power of poetry to be able to change us and to speak out in the times that we're in. But before we descend into the snark, just a reminder that this broadcast and all past podcasts can be found at snarkyfaith.com or wherever else you listen to podcasts. If you like the show, make sure to share and subscribe. And if you're feeling generous, drop us a review over on Apple Podcasts, too. It helps us get the word out. Hey there, boys and girls and friends of the show. I feel like I say this every week as we descend into the snark, but we've got a lot of ground to cover. We don't have very much time. We're going to be speaking with author Megan Ruby Wagner. So any word that I'm saying beyond this point is essentially wasting time in a productive show. So let's go ahead and hop in to the choicest cuts of Christian nuts. That's right. It's time to hop into the Christian crazy of the week.
If loving the Lord is wrong, I don't want to be right.
Lord have mercy. The Lord is my shepherd. He know what I want.
So it's been a little while since we've had Pastor Stephen Furtick, pastor of Elevation Church, in the Christian crazy. Why would we want to have Stephen Furtick in here? Because Stephen is one of the best. He's one of the best at being able to spin gobbledygook into beautiful golden Christian circular logic. Now, if you don't believe me what I'm saying here, you really need to see what he's spinning, because he's going to do a lot of spinning. It's not going to make any sense, but to a lot of the Christian community, they're going to go, oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. This is so much better, as long as I actually don't think about what he's saying here. Oh, so without further ado, and I don't want to continue to have a worship climax here, let's listen to Stephen Furtick giving us a bit of Furtickology about life stuff and God stuff and whatever the stuff he's saying.
The devil knows more about your destiny than you do. There must be something on your life. Can I preach this like God gave it to me? God said some of you are breaking generational curses and you don't even know it. And that's why it's been so hard. And that's why it's been so strong. And that's why it's been so dark. Because you're so strong and you're so positioned and you're so important to His purpose. You must be important. The devil wouldn't tie you up if he wasn't afraid of what would happen if you got loose.
Ooh, amen. Amen. Hey, what is he actually talking about here? So if bad stuff's happening to you in your life, it's because Satan fears what you can become. So be glad that bad stuff is happening to you because, you know, what? Like, what is this? But it is, this is the famous Furtick circle change. It's the circular logic that doesn't make a bit of sense, but gets people going. It gets people going. Because guess what? If you're at your worst, that means God's about to give you your best. Right, my friend, right? If you're in the valley, the Lord's waiting to bring you to the mountaintop. Yeah, that's just analogies and idiocracies. But that sells. That sells in Christian America. But next up, I'm going to just address a question. Oftentimes when I walk around in my community, you know, it's hard for me to walk around and not be noticed because of the show. So people always come up and say, "Hey, Stuart, how do I know if my pastor is a narcissistic asshole?" Well, I'm glad you asked that question, I generally respond. Here's the way to do it. And yes, I actually do carry theme music with me whenever I'm out in the public. So if you want to know, is my pastor a narcissistic asshole? Let's play! So I will warn you that the whole theme music thing is a huge setup. It's a huge setup really just for one way for you to learn. And if you learn nothing else in this life, please, 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 please take this bit of wisdom with you. So before you stands a prime example, one that should be emblazoned and chiseled in marble, so that we can all know, is my pastor a narcissistic asshole? I give you Greg Locke, who will completely answer that question for you.
Am I always right? No. Do I make bad decisions? Yes. But I'm gonna tell you something about leadership. God will bless a bad decision by me more than a good decision by you, because He called me to be the shepherd, not you. And that's just the way the thing rolls in the Bible.
Now, I'm not sure that's what they call it in the Bible, but I'm pretty sure that's what they call abuse. That is a beautiful recipe for spiritual abuse, leadership abuse, any kind of abuse. Just lay it down here, because nothing good's going to happen if you've got a leader that's talking nonsense like this. So have you learned? Did we have our learning moment here? Did we grow from this? Yes. Folks like that, if you end up following them, shame on you. Because now you know, and knowing is half the battle. G.I. Joe. Now last up, you may have just thought that here in the Christian crazy, that I'd forgotten about you, my dear listener, that maybe I was just pushing through a bunch of trivialities and insanities within Christianity. But no, the reason we just name-checked G.I. Joe was to hearken you back in your heart of hearts and your soul of souls to the 80s, when hair bands reigned supreme, When the bigger the hair, the bigger the hit, the bigger the guitar solo. And you're also closer to heaven. Amen! Or something like that. Yes, yes, yes. You see where I'm going with this. So, our last bit of the best of worst in Christianity, we're going to go ahead and bring back some like 80s hair band vibes. That's right. We've got Pastor Robin Bollocks. And Robin's going to give us a little, you know, rock in the spirit. Because here's what I like to think about this. Robin Bullock's been on the Christian Crazy plenty in the past. And, you know, he reeks of a guy that never made it in the 80s in the hair band time and hasn't been able to let go. But here's what I feel is happening here. I think that in this segment, we're going to see we're going to see plenty of crazy stuff. And you're going to ask yourself, like, this is going on during a Sunday morning service. And then you're going to ask yourself, what does this have to do with Jesus? And is this a church? And where am I now? I don't know what's happening. You may ask yourself a lot of those questions, but that's okay. That's okay. Take a breath. Take a breath. We're going to get Robin Bullock. Robin's going to give you some of his songwriting abilities here. And it's glorious. It's beautiful. You are going to kind of feel in that moment. You're going to say, my chains are gone. My soul is free. And we are ready to go. So here is Robin. Here's Robin Bullock bringing you the best of the 80s from the worst of his mouth.
So why is it so important to speak God's word over the situation? Because it's coming from the place of no sin. It's coming from the place he sees you to be. Remember Jeremiah 29:11? I know the plans I have for you. Plans to prosper you and give you a future. He's in your future and he sees you there. You're somewhere in the future and you look much better than you look right now. You've heard it, right? Somewhere in the future, and you look much better than you look right now. Your soul. Say, I'm somewhere.
Can't you just see this, like, back in the 80s and, like, Robin's, like, young and he's, like, telling someone, like, dude, I've got the next, like, rock hit, man. I've got it. And the guy's like, dude, it's one line. Aren't there, like, more lyrics to this thing? And he's like, no, man, I figured it out. You don't need more lyrics. You just say the same lyrics over and over and over again. Mind blown. You're welcome. Third, really, you're worse off for having to listen to that. Oh my God. It floors me. It floors me that in some spectrum of the world, that is called art? No. 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 That's not how it works. But you know, the chorus is the refrain and actually everything else because it's literally just one sentence, but it's such a good sentence. Oh, it's the best. It's the best. It's the best. It's not art. It's not art. It's not art. It's not art. Never was it ever art. I don't even think that's church. I don't even know what, like, someday in the future I'm gonna look better. What is this? Like, is this Jesus? Or is this just like, I'm glowing up because I'm going to go get some surgeries? I don't even know. I don't even know. You don't know? I don't know. So who knows? But leading up to our conversation, getting out of this excrement and into the tasty morsels of what it means to live out your faith in today. I want to preface our conversation with our poet, with the words with the words of Ethan Hawke. And here, Ethan Hawke is beginning to talk about the power of poetry, because the power of poetry is our theme for this hour. So Ethan Hawke, Megan Ruby Wagner.
And I remember a story I came across in my early 20s that kind of meant a lot to me. I was really into Allen Ginsberg, and I was reading his poetry, and I was reading, he did a lot of interviews. And one time, William F. Buckley had this television program called Firing Line, and Ginsberg went on there and sang a Hare Krishna song while playing the harmonium, you know. And he got back to New York to all his intelligentsia friends, and they all told him, "Does she know that everybody thinks you're an idiot? I mean, the whole country's making fun of you." And he said, "That's my job. You know, I'm a poet, and I'm going to play the fool. Most people have to go to work all day long, and they come home, and they fight with their spouse, and they eat, and they, like, turn on the old boob tube, and somebody tries to sell them something. And I just screwed all that up. I went on, and I sang about Krishna. And now they're sitting in bed and going, who's this stupid poet? And they can't fall asleep, right? And that's his job as a poet. And so I find that very liberating, because I think that most of us really want to offer the world something of quality, something that the world will consider good or important. And that's really the enemy, because it's not up to us whether what we do is any good. And if history's taught us anything, the world is an extremely unreliable critic, right? So you have to ask yourself, do you think human creativity matters? Well, most people don't spend a lot of time thinking about poetry, right? They have a life to live, and they're not really that concerned with Allen Ginsberg's poems or anybody's poems until their father dies. They go to a funeral. You lose a child. Somebody breaks your heart. They don't love you anymore. And all of a sudden, you're desperate for making sense out of this life. And has anybody ever felt this bad before? How did they come out of this cloud? Or the inverse, something great. You meet somebody and your heart explodes. You love them so much you can't even see straight. You know, you're dizzy. Did anybody feel like this before? What is happening to me? And that's when art's not a luxury. It's actually sustenance. We need it. Okay, well, what is it? Human creativity is nature manifest in us. We look at the Aurora Borealis, right? I did this movie called White Fang when I was a kid, and we shot up in Alaska, and you go out at night, and the sky was like rippling with purple and pink and white. And it's the most beautiful thing I ever saw. It really looked like the sky was playing. Beautiful. Go to Grand Canyon at sundown. It's beautiful. We know that's beautiful. But fall in love? Your lover's pretty beautiful. I have 4 kids. Watching them play, watching them like pretend to be a butterfly or run around the house or doing anything, it's so beautiful. And I believe that we are here on this star in space to try to help one another, right? And first we have to survive, and then we have to thrive. And to thrive, to express ourselves, all right, well, here's the rub. We have to know ourselves. What do you love? And if you get close to what you love, who you are is revealed to you, and it expands.
So with that in mind, let us prepare ourselves to be able to think about the way that poetry points out beauty, heartache, and everything in between. It's what speaks to the groans in our souls and the ecstasy in our eyes. So here is Megan Ruby Wagner in our conversation about how poetry can speak from the soul and change our lives and push back against the atrocities of today. Well, today we've got Megan Ruby Wagner. She's a school counselor, an activist, and a poet. Her debut book, Honeysuckle, is a fantastic collection of poetry centered on the intersection of faith, mental health, and motherhood. She lives in Ohio with her husband and 3 children. So welcome, Ruby.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Ruby, I just have to say that this book has been very, very timely for me reading through this, like with a lot that's going on in the world today. That's a little crazy. This has been very timely. And it was one of the things that it just so often I felt cut to the core by your words as you're going through this. I found myself nodding a lot to you going like, mm-hmm, oh yes. And I also just loved how you vividly talked about your childhood. It brought me back to the summers of my youth. And I really appreciate with what you've done here in Honeysuckle. Now, I wanted to start things off with people that may not know your work. I always like hearing an author's work through an author's voice, other than having somebody else read it. So I wanted you to start off with one of your poems called Sunday Homebodies.
Absolutely. Here we go. Thank you. Sunday Homebodies. Blessed are the homebodies, those who have not yet figured out how to return to the sanctuaries. For yours is a sanctuary of living room couches and front porch swings. Blessed are the wounded, those who have been broken, rejected on hallowed ground. For yours is the healing that defies the gatekeepers. Blessed are the weary, those who cannot muster the energy to put on their Sunday best. For yours is the comforts of honest existence. Blessed are the patient, who do not rush others' return. For yours is a steady pace that waits and does not panic over lesser numbers. Blessed are the naturalists who worship in hiking boots, those who find God in all her glory in the dappled light between the trees, for yours is Eden. Blessed are the mothers who spend Sundays like all the others fetching snacks and being baptized in bodily fluids, for you are the salt of the earth. Blessed are the weary, the wounded, the homeless, physical and spiritual, wanderers, the hesitant, the doubters, the skeptics, the outsiders. For yours is the kingdom of heaven, and God will be there when you're ready.
Thank you. So tell us, like, how did this book come about? Like, what was the journey towards making Honeysuckle?
Yeah, so I've always done some writing, but I've kept most of it pretty private. And then when everything shut down in March of 2020, I started publishing a little bit, just sharing some of the things that I had written online. A lot of those were kind of like essays or kind of op-ed type of pieces that I shared. I wrote some stuff for Red Letter Christians. I wrote some stuff for just like my own personal blog. And once I started writing, I got a little bit more comfortable with it and felt a little bit more comfortable putting myself out there. And then I didn't really start writing poetry too heavily until really about like a year and a half ago. And I started writing poetry because I didn't have large blocks of time to sit down and write a lot of other stuff. So I would like get an idea in my head and kind of be toying around with it, and it'd be rattling around in there. But I've got three small kids, and I don't have time to just like sit and write for hours. So I would kind of jot down thoughts here and there and kind of started writing poetry that way. So again, I started writing, and then I just kind of casually shared a piece or two, and then kind of got some momentum going. And then once I had gotten a pretty good collection of pieces, I really wanted them to be in one place. So I kind of put this book together, and I self-published this first one. So it was a really, really easy process. But it's been really fun because I get to connect with people that I don't know at all. I get to connect with people that I've lost touch with, and we can kind of reconnect through the poetry. So that's been really cool.
That's awesome. So what are things that inspire or fuel your writing?
I write a lot about my kids. I write a lot about just like my day-to-day life. And then I write a lot about, you kind of mentioned it before, I write a lot about mental health, and I write a lot about faith, just because those are kind of the things that take up most of my time. My kids, and I work as a counselor, and I'm a Jesus follower. So those are the things that kind of define my life. So those are kind of what I write about for the most part.
Now, a lot of it, like you'd mentioned too, that your faith is something that inspires you within this. And it feels like a lot of your work is drenched in this kind of a journey of an evolving faith. Would you say that's about, yeah. So give us like a little, like, what is the taste of like your spiritual background and what you've been through and what brings you here?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up very, very, very evangelical. My dad worked my entire from before I was born all the way through after I graduated college at a conservative Christian college right down the road from us. We went to a big Baptist church in town, and we were the family that was there, you know, Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, Wednesday nights, a couple other times throughout the week. So my childhood was very, very shaped by the church. And that was all good and well until I probably hit like my teenage years, and I got really, really angry. And there, I'm sure, are, you know, a host of reasons why. But one of them was I felt like I had a lot of questions that the church just didn't have any answers for. And not just that the church didn't have answers for, but the church didn't even want to talk about, you know. And I'm not talking about my church in particular, kind of like the church at large, where, you know, questions like, why is there suffering? And, you know, the idea that God created all of these people, and some of them, according to certain doctrines, are going to like suffer for all eternity. And like, I had problems with that. And I felt like a lot of Christians didn't want to talk about it, or just didn't, you know, it was, I was rocking the boat, or, you know, causing problems with that kind of thing. So, I mean, back then terms like deconstruction weren't really used, but I would say that was kind of when it started for me, where I was, just kind of jaded with all of it. And that kind of continued throughout, really ever since then, I've kind of been wrestling with that. But the entire time I felt like, you know, I was so angry at the church, and I was angry at God sometimes. I was angry at evangelicalism. But there was something compelling about Jesus. So I didn't know what to do with it. You know, I could never like walk away and be totally done, because I'm like, okay, Jesus, I like him. Eat all the rest of this sometimes. And then really over the past few years, I feel like we do such a disservice to people in some of our evangelical churches, because we don't even acknowledge the variety of different doctrines and beliefs there are. You know, I was never taught stuff like, well, this is one interpretation, but there are also others. It was like, no, here is what it, you know, there is a hell, and it's here's who's going. And it was never presented as like, oh, here's what we think, here's how we got to that conclusion. Other people who also love God have come to different conclusions. So over the past few years, I've just found out about some other people who've written and taught, who really, like I've read a lot of Rachel Held Evans and Nadia Bolz Weber, and I feel like I've found a faith that gives me hope, which I don't feel like I had for a long time, where I was just like, where I feel like, you know, there, I can love Jesus and also love my neighbors, and those things aren't, you know, one doesn't rule out the other, which I felt that when I was in more traditional evangelical spaces.
Now, in your poem Exodus, you say this line, you say, we have left to find Jesus, not because we've abandoned him. I want you to unpack a little bit, like, what does that look like for you, especially in regards to like this kind of ache in your faith that you oftentimes have?
Yeah. So interestingly, I still go to church. But I have moved away from a lot of kind of like pop culture evangelicalism. And I think for me personally, the closer I have gotten to God, and the harder I have followed after Jesus, the further I find myself from mainstream American evangelical church. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that there are not good people in those churches and that those churches don't help some people. But when I think about things like, you know, the best way to take care of the poor and to take care of the strangers and to welcome refugees and like, the evangelical church has done some real harm, mm-hmm. in my opinion. And I feel like I had to leave some of those spaces behind to follow Jesus more authentically.
And I think you're not alone in that. I think that that's a sentiment that's happening to a lot of us out there, of being able to say that somehow, yeah, I've outgrown the space. And that for me to continue to grow in progress, it means I have to leave. I have to move on to whatever God has for me next. Yes. And speaking about a lot of the damage that evangelicals have done too, we've recently had the overturn of Roe v. Wade, which has kind of been a fever dream of conservative evangelicals for more than 40 years. They have gotten this. And one thing that I've appreciated, that something for me that's changed in this time, it's so easy to be able to read social media posts and articles and news and all of this other stuff, and eventually it just makes you sick. But poetry has a way of being able to give you that kind of space when you kind of read through it to feel things and not just digest information. And I really liked your poem that you wrote about the recent overturn of Roe, called Jane Roe. So if you would you please read that for us?
Jane Roe. Tonight I Googled, how quickly can I get my tubes tied? Tears in my eyes and dropping onto my keyboard like summer rain. Because I do not want my tubes tied. I have 3 babies now, and truth be told, would welcome a 4th if it should come our way. I will never not want another baby, no matter how many I already have. I have spent many a night weeping over my children's 2 quickly passing childhoods. I want to be a mother of babies forever and ever, but tonight I am afraid. Afraid of getting both cancer and pregnant, and being denied treatment, leaving my already born 3 motherless. Afraid of an incomplete miscarriage, afraid I'll lose a baby and my body won't let go, that my womb will cling to the remnants of a life already gone and I will need an abortion. That's what it's called, you know. These mother-saving interventions. Need an abortion but die from the poisoning instead. Afraid that I will miscarry and someone will find out that I drank a glass of wine in the early days before I knew. That I will get a warrant in exchange for my empty uterus. Before you roll your eyes, there are already women in prison for such things. Already laws working their way through state legislatures that would criminalize female tragedies like this. Don't tell me I have no need to worry. Not when my own body can be leveraged against me. Not when my innermost workings are fodder for prosecution. Don't tell me not to worry. Not today. Not today.
So how do you see poetry as a means or a vehicle for protest and advocacy?
So I think one of the problems with the way that we interact with each other in general today is that we don't see each other's humanity. Mm. And I think poetry is a way of kind of tapping into that, where you know, I have friends that fall on the other side of this argument that are, you know, happy that Roe v. Wade was overturned. And we disagree on the issue, but we can find that commonality and like, oh, we both know what it is to be pregnant and worried that there's not going to be a heartbeat. You know, like there are things we can really find that commonality. And I think poetry has a way of doing that. And I found that the more vulnerable I am in my writing, the more I can relate to other people, where there are pieces that I've written that I know, I go back and forth on whether I'm going to post it or not, because I'm like, ah, that's, you know, that's too far. That's a little much. And those are typically the pieces that I get the most response from other people when they read it. I think most of us can relate to these really hard parts of what it is to be human. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about those very often. But poetry has a way of getting to that.
Now for you, how do you wrestle through how much vulnerability? You know, because you're a school counselor, you're a mom, you're all of these things, and it's difficult sometimes when we bare our souls, not knowing how people will respond. So yeah, how do you weigh that out? What's
I try to be mindful of whether or not anything I've written might be harmful to someone that I care about. And those are pieces that I would not publish, or at least, you know, I think there's a difference between saving it for a book and then posting it on social media. Sure. You know, maybe it'll be in a book somewhere, but like, I'm not going to put this on the internet right now. So I always want to, first and foremost, be mindful of the people that I love and not share anything or overshare anything that might put them in a vulnerable place. I don't feel like that's my call. Like I can share my stuff, but it's not my place to share my family's stuff. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So as far as my own writing, there's not a lot that I don't share or wouldn't share. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason why is I think we struggle the most when we feel like we struggle alone. Mm. So I feel like my writing is a little bit of a way to show other people that they're not alone in some of these things where, you know, I've written about, I had an eating disorder for a number of years and struggled with some mental health issues. And I've written pretty openly about a lot of that stuff. And like I said, those are the pieces where I start getting messages in my inbox, like, oh, I didn't know about that, or, you know, me too, that kind of thing. And as a society, we need to do a better job of sharing our vulnerability in a way that gives hope to other people who are struggling. Which is what I try to do. Yeah, there's not a lot that I don't or wouldn't share. I think it's important for us to be able to find that common ground with each other and admit that struggling is like a normal part of life. Because I think sometimes we think, you know, when we struggle, we feel like we're these freaks of nature and like nobody else. Like, oh God, if anybody found out about that, like, that'd be humiliating. And I think everybody's kind of in that same place. We just don't ever talk about those things. Mm-hmm. So it's helpful to do that.
No, you're absolutely right about that. And there, especially like within the church, there's this whole like stigma about needing therapy or mental health. And a lot of this, you almost just have to, oh, you just pray it away. And that's how it works, right? No. And I do. And you'd mentioned that when, I do appreciate your bravery and vulnerability and being able to share those things, because I think it's very, very important for others to be able to see that, wait, we all scratch, we all bleed, we're all the same in that way. And so I really, really appreciate how that impacts your work. Now, anytime, because we talked about with vulnerability, anytime you take a stand, you also invite critics.
Yep.
Have you experienced much pushback from critics in your work, and how do you handle it?
Overall, the feedback I get is mostly positive. There have been some people that just are nasty, and I just block them right away, and I'm not engaging in that conversation. The most pushback I've gotten was not about poetry. The poetry people don't tend to, I don't get too much criticism there. And I think it's because it's artistic. Like, I'm not saying this is right, this is wrong.
Gotcha.
Here, you know, it's just kind of, I'm presenting a poem and you can read it. You don't have to like it, but people don't really criticize. I mean, they just kind of, if they don't like it, I guess they just move on. Mm-hmm. I wrote something right before Easter about the idea that God did not have to kill Jesus in order to forgive us. And that got people fired up. So that was the time that, that was made for a fun couple days. People were real mad about that. So, but by and large, you know, I got a couple nasty comments, but again, there were people who kind of surprised me with their kindness about it too, where there were people who I would have expected to maybe be angry about it or to disagree vehemently, who didn't or were really gracious. Mm. So, I don't get too much criticism in general, but that was the time that was people did not like. Mm. People like an angry God, and they have a really hard time with a God that's more loving than they are accustomed to.
Which is so funny. I don't even, that's one of those things like, as I've kind of moved through in my faith and stuff too, I'm like, why does that God somehow like make you so much more horny than like a loving and nice God? But they just like go here and you're like, what? So, which,
like we're good with a God who is super, super angry and hateful and just like out for blood.
Yep.
That we can do. But a God that like lets everybody in? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
I prefer the drunken alcoholic, angry daddy God that, I don't get that.
Yes. Violence.
Which is really sad. I know we joke. That's incredibly sad. I think that people latch onto that worldview. So this portion I'm going to switch over. So this is going to be the more personal Megan questions, as if we have not been personal at all so far. But in your life, how has poetry impacted you? Like other poetry?
Poetry. So I don't always read a lot of poetry. But the times I read poetry are the times that I feel the most desperate, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I think poetry has a way of really giving hope in those moments. So I can remember a time, I was just going through some difficult stuff, and I found it was like a blog I follow, and she posted something about a couple of her favorite poems, and then people were like dropping their favorites in the comment section. So I was like reading them on my lunch break, and I was like weeping in my office because I was like, oh my gosh, it's just so much. And they were also, it was so great. And it just gives me hope that even when things are bleak and the world seems to be going to hell in a handbasket, other people have been there and felt that way too and are also not giving up and are in the fight with us, and that we are not alone. And even though it's hard, we're going to keep being there for each other. So
now speaking about you and hope and life and all of those things. So what is currently capturing your curiosity or imagination? What is something that's kind of giving you a little bit of awe these days? Aside from when kids actually take their full naps during the summer, probably.
Yes, that. I got like 30 minutes of quiet right now, so that's pretty awe-inspiring. They give me awe. So I find a lot of, I think sometimes we look for these like big like Grand Canyon type of things to be awe-inspiring, and they certainly are. But I think especially at the stage of life I'm in, like I don't have those types of moments very often because my days are mostly like cleaning up messes and getting snacks and changing diapers and putting kids down for naps and going to the grocery. Like it's all these very mundane kind of things. But things that give, that fill me with awe. My kids. So this is a couple days ago. I had a student at school, one of my former students, passed away in an accident a couple of weeks ago. And I was talking, I had to go into work to help. We offered counseling for students. So I went in the day before to kind of get stuff ready. And my five-year-old asked me where I was going. So I said, well, I'm going to work. And he said, why are you going to work? It's a Sunday. I explained a little bit to him. I said, well, I had a student, and he knows a little bit about death. Like my grandfather died a few years ago, and he remembers that. So he's starting to kind of ask those questions. And I was telling him what I was doing, and he said, I wish I would have been there. At first I was like, what? And he said, I wish I would have been there when he died. And my first thought was like, oh my gosh, what a morbid, awful thing to say. Like, oh, why did you say that? And he said, I think he might have been scared, and I wanted to make sure he was okay. Whew. And that I was like, oh my gosh, like just the way, I didn't know what to do. I was just like dumbstruck. like, okay, the world's gonna be all right, you know, like we're in the middle of this horrible thing. And my five-year-old, who like 30 seconds previously was like throwing a fit on the floor or something, you know, was like, his response though, like, I wanted to be there when that kid died because I want to make sure he was okay. He might have been scared. That kind of thing fills me with awe. I've got a couple friends. Ones I'm thinking of are gay and have been treated just really, really horribly. By a lot of people, but people that they love, people in the church, people in their families, just the amount of hate they have received is horrible. And they manage to somehow still be like the kindest, most loving, generous, gracious, wonderful people I know. Like, how? I don't know. they've been treated just horribly, and they don't return hate with hate. It gives me hope. Like I think okay, world is not all bad. That gives me hope. So it's more those type of things that are awe inspiring for me.
I love those regular everyday things that keep us going. It doesn't need to be like a big bang, but it's those things that like these folks inspire me in that. Yeah. So in that same vein, what in crazy times such as this, what is feeding you? What's giving you life?
So there's the Mr. Rogers quote, which you've probably heard before, about how his mom always told him to look for the helpers. And that is sometimes the only thing that gives me hope. Like things seem really bleak, and I can look out and see other people who, despite all of the nastiness in the world, are still helping other people and are still showing up and are still, they're not giving up hope. So I think about like the day, I don't know where your listeners fall on this issue, but the day that Roe v. Wade was overturned, I was angry. I was angry. It felt like a hopeless day. And then I saw this picture of Elizabeth Warren, and she's like in the streets holding hands with these ladies, and she looks pissed. And I was like, okay, we're not giving up yet. Like, we can, it's not the end, because, you know, we're not just laying down and going home and like wringing our hands. Not giving up the fight. So looking for people who are still in the fight and still working to help others, and not allowing current situations or current circumstances in the world to just totally defeat them. Mm-hmm. Keeps me going.
I love that, because I think that's I think a lot of us felt what you felt on that week, where it was, yeah, it just felt a heavy weight, and
it was like one decision after another. Like every day, I was like, "Oh my gosh, what are they doing?"
Yes.
The Supreme Court did that.
Yeah, and this is all on the heels of several shootings as well, too. Uh-huh. So it's just kind of like, yeah.
Yes.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah. There's been a lot. There's been a lot lately. So. I want to ask you too, as we start kind of moving towards the end of this interview, like what are you currently working on? Do you have anything that's next for you?
Yeah, I've got some things in works. And really I'm just trying to figure out what I want to do from like a publishing perspective. Mm. I've got quite a bit of poetry written that kind of centers on motherhood and my children and that sort of thing. So I'm working on putting a collection together that's thematically kind of centered on motherhood and some of those mundane things. And then I've got a book of poetry that I wrote last summer. I'm still kind of tweaking it and adding to it here and there, about my eating disorder and some mental health stuff. Mm-hmm. So that is also in the works. I'm planning to have at least one of those out by the end of summer.
Okay.
So putting it together in probably August, that will be out and ready to go. So that's what's coming up. So that's the most imminent thing coming down the pike.
Well, Megan, if people want to be able to follow your work or keep track of you and hopefully not stalk you, like what is a good way for people to follow what you're doing?
Yeah, you can find me on Facebook, just under Megan Ruby Wagner or Megan Ruby Wagner Writes. Those are linked to each other, so they're both right there. On Instagram, I write under Megan Ruby Wagner Writes. So I can send you those so you have those.
Oh, definitely. We'll put them on the show notes and get all of that good stuff out there, too.
I post most of my writing on Instagram and Facebook.
Now, as we conclude this interview, I wanted to let Megan read something more, once more, to be able to kind of leave us with a taste and of her work. So go ahead, Megan. We have Feathers and Leaves.
Thank you very much. Here we go. I believe in God. And before you think me noble or naive or good or dogmatic, let me say I believe in God the way a child who has fallen into a reaches for a hand, not because they know with certainty that someone is there, but because they need there to be in order to survive. Because in order to put one foot in front of the other, I have to convince myself I'm walking toward something. I could be wrong. Sometimes I am overcome by the extremities of life, breath-stealing joy and bone-crushing sorrow, first breaths and last breaths, often too close together. Love and betrayal, togetherness and isolation, and we puny humans tugged back and forth between the two ends, quivering in the middle. And in the seconds, minutes, days, years, when I get too close to either end, I reach out of the water for God, and God meets me there. And in these moments, I believe. In these same moments, I also think of the redwoods. Is it coincidence or divine that the mightiest trees grow in California, land of earthquakes and fire? That even where the ground breaks apart beneath unsteady feet and threatens to swallow us whole, and fires rage like hell on earth, life hangs on. I think of the word flex, all muscle and sway, the balancing place between stay and go, life and death. Emily Dickinson called hope the thing with feathers. But sometimes I think hope is the thing with leaves, and that maybe God lives there, among the trees and the feathers and the leaves, and beckons. Come see.
Yeah. Well, the book is Honeysuckle by Megan Ruby Wagner, available on Amazon. And Megan, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's all I've got this hour. Before I send you off, just a reminder to share the show, subscribe, and give Snarky Faith a review over on Apple Podcasts. It helps to get the word out. If you want to reach out to me directly, hit me up at stuart@snarkyfaith.com. That's S-T-U-A-R-T at snarkyfaith.com. Thank you for being a part of this show week in, week out. I appreciate you guys. I appreciate you being a part of this whole thing that I feel like a lot of us are doing. We're processing through what is the truth in my faith in this season of life in the world? And where do I see God moving? And how do I move myself more in rhythm to that? I think that things like poetry can remind us of the beauty in life that we can tend to forget when we get caught up in the grind of busyness. But I also think community and friendship also pulls us out of those places as well. And in this time that we've been through pandemic, and we've moved out of it, and then we still live in uncertain times, I continue to tell you to be brave, to love well, and to move out into the world and engage with people in the same way that Jesus did. As I release you out into the wild, wide world, I send you out with the holiest amount of grace and snark and peace. Now I'm out of here. Peace be with you. So it's after the show, and I know what you're here for. Do you know what you're here for? Do you? Do you? Do you? Well, I know that you're here for the cringiest of the week, the Christian cringe of the week. But earlier in the show, if you remember, I gave you some sweet guitar licks and vocals by Robin Bollocks. Well, guess what? Our Christian cringe this week is going to be an all musical version. That's right. You get Robin Bollocks back again, and then, who knows? Who knows who will show up? Who knows? So without further ado, let's go ahead and hop in to your Christian cringe of the week.
Christian cringe!
No! God, please, no! No!
Right now, in the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, the name above all names, you spirit of hell that would attempt to hurt Donald Trump, I command you to bow your knee. I track you down from your place of authority. I will not tolerate it. It will not happen in the name of Jesus. I call on every prophetic voice to lift up your voices and stop the beast from the east. Come on! Come on!
Now's your time to guess what the lyrics are going to be in Robin's amazing song. So think about it. Here's your moment. And go, Bollocks, go!
Stop the beast from the east. 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 You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I know what you're saying. I mean, I know like what you're saying because I have ears and I am able to interpret sound within my ear holes and my brain and learning those kind of things. Right, right. I understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, but what you're actually talking about, what you're prophesying about here, like, what is this? What is this?
I don't know. I don't know that we will ever figure out what is the beast of the East or the best of the West. I mean, who knows? I mean, when you start rhyming, it's really hard to stop criming. Oh, I don't even know what that means. It doesn't mean anything. But last up, because I promised you Christian Cringe with lots of music. Like, this is the Lin-Manuel Miranda version, the Hamilton of the crazy here. So who could we end with? Who could we end with? How could we do this? Well, I will give you Hank Kuhneman. Hank Kuhneman, who is really known as the jazz prophet. He's not really known as that. But yes, I think he's going to jazz prophecy that what we're going to see here. And what I want to ponder here, what I want to ponder before his jazz prophecy, before I leave you in the throes of the jazz prophecy, alone and without an adult guardian, may God have mercy on your souls. Before I leave you there, abandoned in the middle of the desert, like a box of baby puppies. Before I leave you there, like a baby in a fire station. Before I leave you there, like a tub of Go-Gurt in a supermarket parking lot, which still means nothing. But before I finish here, I give you Hank Kuhneman. Hank Kuhneman doing his best. Because it's a beautiful thing when Hank gets going. Now, in olden times, there was another word for prophet. People would use the word soothsayer. But I will give you a new word here. He's a soothing sayer, because I just kind of want you to think about this. So let's assume God's the God of the universe. And just assume, I know it doesn't make sense, that somehow God is speaking to Hank's pea brain, right? Just run with me here. Let's assume that's happening. All right? And Hank is going to tell us, or really just tell his congregation, again on a Sunday morning, the things they want to hear, the things that make them feel comfortable and confirmed in their tiny worldviews here. So Hank here is a like soothing sayer, but not a soothsayer or a prophet, because a prophet speaks the truth. And Hank here, Hank's got a bit of a problem with the truth, because, you know, I hear he's got like a little addiction to the, you know, the bullshit. But I leave you here with the best of the worst. And may God truly have mercy on your souls.
Spirit of God says, do you know that they speak of whistleblowers? But I've got news for those in the earth. I am the one that has blown the whistle on their agenda. Therefore, watch the accusations that they have brought against the one who they say they beat in an election. I speak of Donald Trump, says the Lord. Ha! Watch what I do to raise up the sound of those on that day.
Sorry, not trying to like mess up his jazz riff he has going on here. But like when you hear him say this, like if you we think about this, because we're human beings supposedly created in the image of God. So we have intellect, we have reason, we have ability, we have personal agency. And we, if you were to listen to actually what he's saying about God, that somehow God somehow was bested. And taken down, because the only thing God had a hard on for was having the chosen Trump.
Trump in the office, right? So we're here. But like, does God not seem a little flaccid? Like, does God not need a little Viagra? Like when you hear Hank talking about this, like, God just kind of can't get it up anymore. No, I'm not saying that's the God of the universe, but I am saying that is Hank Kuhneman's God of the universe, because somehow God's going to redeem this thing that God couldn't redeem earlier, but he'll redeem it now or redeem it later, but redeeming will happen. And my last bit that I'll leave you with here, and I will leave you with this. I will leave you alone in the car with the windows up on a hot day. I'm going to leave you with this because I want nothing more. But I'm going to ask you, can you trust a prophet? Can you trust a prophet that jazz prophecies with this tune in the background? Listen here, and then listen to Hank, and go, huh, I think this is a horror movie.
And they're gonna reveal just what took place, not only upon the night of your election and thereafter, but God says even on their supposed insurrection of January 6th. Because God says, I'm going to not only bring global freedom, I'm going to bring freedom to many things that they have said were true, but they are lying. Therefore, watch me shred it, blow their cover, and watch as there be many voices now that shall speak and will expose them.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.